Why are you frowning? Are you frowning because we're done?
Oh no, that's just my face. Thanks, Mercedes.
Okay, all right, sorry. All right.
Welcome to Rivera and Reeves, the podcast where we break through the bias, report the news, and occasionally trip over our soapboxes while ranting about the headlines.
Every week, we tackle the biggest stories with sharp analysis, unfiltered honesty, and just enough sarcasm to keep it fun.
So pull up a chair, grab your coffee, and join us as we wade through the spin, because the media is trash and we have zero patience for their nonsense.
Hey, friends, and welcome to another episode of Rivera and Reeves. I'm Mercedes, and I'm here with my friend Rachel. Say hello, Rachel.
Hello, Rachel. I try and match your energy.
My energy is confused. Okay, so I stayed up too late last night finishing Band of Brothers.
Oh, that'll wreck you.
I was destroyed.
Did you cry?
I don't want to talk about it.
Okay.
I don't want to admit anything. I don't want to admit that there was a moment there at the end that both my husband and I looked at each other and were like, with our eyes, like, bigger than this.
I will say my husband is not a crier, but I have seen him cry at the births of our children. That's acceptable. And then maybe one or two other times, you know, sad moments. And then at the end of Saving Private Ryan, he may or may not have had one singular tear. And so when it's war movies, we will allow it.
It's permissible. Yeah.
Yes.
So, but I mean, it was fabulous. So anyways, I don't know where my energy is at right now because I made poor choices and decided to stay up too late to finish. Because I have one episode left. And I was like,
yeah, you got to do it. You got to do it. Like, and then we're laying there thinking, are we going to war as a country because of the tariff situation?
I mean, there's a lot of anxiety happening
right now.
So what are we talking about today? Today, we got a lot of questions about, because yesterday apparently was Liberation Day, according to the White House. And we have thoughts on that. Not that we know, look, we're going to be talking tariffs, economic theory. This is not our wheelhouse. We are not pros in this, but we will freely share our opinions.
And we're going to approach this as the common man. What all of you are doing out there right now is asking questions like, wait, what? Why? Should I like this? Does this feel good? I'm not sure. Everybody's telling me that now I'm going to be paying an extra $5,000 a year, $5,000 I don't have because of tariffs. So we're going to do our best to ask the questions that you're asking and break it down.
Yep.
Hopefully we make you feel
better. We do it justice. But before we do that, make sure that you give us a follow. So hit that follow button so you don't miss any other episode. And if this is your first time here, welcome. We're happy to have you here. And welcome to your new favorite podcast. Also, a reminder that we have a Substack that if you don't want to be listening to ads, you can become a paying supporter, get the podcast ad-free, plus bonus content, because we do have another unfiltered episode coming up, I think, next Monday. I got to look at the calendar. We're recording on the 14th, which is like a Saturday, so whatever day it is after that. If you want that bonus episode, you got to be a paying supporter. So I suggest that you get on that. And let's talk about it. Okay, so yesterday. So
lots happened, actually.
Trump is someone who he's a showman. He likes to create a moment, an event, a production. And he'd been building up this whole tariff situation for a while now by announcing it as Liberation Day, which I thought was like a very, I don't know.
It's really interesting.
It's
intentional,
interesting,
for sure.
It's definitely a PR move. It's definitely a PR move. Because what is he? It's like the Democrats were going around yesterday after his announcement calling it like Recession Day or something like that. They were just, so obviously there's a battle of messaging going on. It's a PR move. He did the announcement yesterday at the White House from the Rose Garden. Per usual, he had a lot of people in attendance, especially a lot of auto workers were in attendance. They spoke in support of the president. They all seem very excited about it. Now, the idea of why auto workers would be excited about this is because the ultimate goal that the administration is attempting is to bring manufacturing and jobs and investment back to the United States, which I think is a completely valid thing to be wanting to do. And I do think that in theory, some tariffs used strategically will do that.
And this is something that conservatives have been calling for. We need to bring creation and manufacturing back into our country so we're not so dependent on other countries. So this is something that everybody's been talking about. I think people are just like, whoa, maybe not like that, but or maybe it feels very all-encompassing and really, really out of everybody's depth. Like, we're not just imposing tariffs on China, which makes sense in a way, but we are going around the globe. We're just slapping tariffs on literally everybody. So this is a lot for people to swallow.
Yeah. So he did his long speech, made his case, made some interesting comments along mm-hmm. with the speech. But the star of the event was the Kinko's board.
Yeah, the handouts that they gave all the people in attendance.
There were handouts and there was two large Kinko board. And there were displays that gave you an entire list of almost everybody that the U.S. plans to tariff.
I mean, I'm looking at the...
There were some people that weren't included.
There's 8 sheets of paper. And on each sheet, there had to have been like, I don't know, 25 countries. So, I mean, mm-hmm. it's a wide array.
Yeah. And it appears if you look at it, when I initially saw it, what I found really interesting is that the board or the handouts list the country, what they're charging us or what their tariffs are on us, which I'm putting an asterisk on that because we're going to actually discuss that a little bit more in depth in a moment. Okay. But what they're allegedly charging us in tariffs and then what we plan to charge them. So for a long time, we were hearing about reciprocal tariffs. And so reciprocal tariffs to me meant you're going to charge us 20%, we're going to charge you 20%. You're mm-hmm. going to charge us 60%, we're going to charge you 60%. However, when the board was revealed or when the numbers were revealed, I quickly deducted that what we were actually going to be charging was 50% of the tariff that we allege that they charge us.
And I mean, just as a normal person looking at this, before we even get into what the implications of this are and what it means, because we're still trying to figure that out, I do think it's, as a normal person who doesn't talk about tariffs every day and has a lot of other things in my life to worry about, it is kind of crazy to look at, regardless of what we decide we're actually tariffing these people and the intention. It is kind of bonkers, though, the amount of tariffs that are imposed on us as a country.
Yes.
Like, when you look at all these countries, you're like, excuse me, you're tariffing us how much? Wow. Okay, Cambodia, or okay, Trinidad and Tobago. That's all right. So I think definitely it's, regardless of what you think about what happened yesterday and the showmanship of it all and what the intentions are and why they're actually doing it and how they created these numbers, it is pretty wild to look at. Like, most Americans do not understand or know, myself included, how much our goods were tariffed.
And it's not just that. I mean, our goods are tariffed. And the reason it's done, like, if you go to other countries, you will realize that it's near impossible for the U.S. to have free trade in certain industries. So, for mm-hmm. example, I mean, I'm just going to give it out like a real quick example. You go to Europe, and if you've ever done a vacation in Europe and stuff like that, you realize that automobiles, for example, the cars that we see here in the United States that are so prevalent, you don't see a single one of them
mm-mm.
in Europe. Now, nope. Vice versa, there are cars in Europe that you don't see here in the United States.
Yeah.
Is that an issue of tariffing, of trade? Like, those are the type of things that need to be debated. There's also, like, Japan is very protectionist with tariffs. So there's just, like, a lot of things to be debated. But it is becoming increasingly clear, which I agree with you. I don't think most Americans realized mm-mm. how imbalanced it was. Now, people will say the imbalance is justified because we're the bigger, richer country. But also at the same time, I'm like, Just because we're bigger and we're richer, we're not like doing great. And we also can't be like subsidizing everyone. And the other problem is that it has led to a lot of our manufacturing going overseas, which is the major problem. Manufacturing going overseas means jobs that leave the country. And it also creates a national security risk. So I get the idea. I totally support the motivations. I, for a long time, was like a hard free trade person. And now necessarily, like, I'm like, this all or nothing, I don't think is a good idea. So should it be all full free trade? Clearly not, because we've seen the consequences of that. However, I don't know if this reciprocal tariff situation should be it either.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? So it's so clearly, so what happened with the announcement is that, first of all, there is a base, doesn't matter for who, apparently, of 10%. So no matter where we are, like if you have a tariff that results in, I don't know, 12% or something like that, they do the base at 10%.
Yeah.
So that's the floor, so to speak. And then you have people like Vietnam, who the administration claims charges us 90% tariffs. And so they go to 46. Yeah. India, 52%. So we go to 26. Thailand, 72%. So we go to 36. Now, there's also a lot of discussion about a lot of focus, obviously, on China. And watching interviews from especially Bessette, which is the Secretary of the Treasury, and even Lutnick, Secretary of the Commerce, they talk about how China subsidized their markets so they're able to absorb tariffs more. They also do workarounds to avoid our tariffs. So, like, for example, if we're putting, you know, what a 32%, and by the way, this 32% on China is on top of that 25% that's already been issued to China.
So it's over 50%.
Yeah.
Right?
So we're looking at over 50% to China. So, like, apparently what they have been doing is, in order to avoid some of the tariffs, they have been producing the parts essentially in China, then sending them out to Indo-Pacific countries, for example, like Vietnam or Cambodia, that have a lower wage and also don't have as much tariff or not as negative relationship with the United States. Assembly happens there, and then the export happens from there. So they're doing like a workaround. And I think that's also part of the issue here that the United States or the administration is trying to resolve.
And I think that, if I'm honest, in simple terms, I think Trump and his administration are tapping into something that a lot of people would feel if they understood that it was happening. Basically, we take a hit from a lot of these countries simply because they probably would say we're the wealthiest country in the world and we can afford to be tariffed. And I see Trump as someone who comes in, he's like, excuse me, I don't, we're rich, but I don't feel like that's just not fair. He seems like he's the type who's like, you're not going to do that to us.
Yeah.
Just because we are USA, you can't. He's coming in and it's almost kind of like that old school mindset of some conservatives that like tariffs are evil. Just because we're rich, you can't unfairly tax us, basically. And he's taking it in a different way. They're using them against us. So we're going to hit right back. And we'll see how many of you want to keep doing this, because it's going to hurt them as well. I guess the question is it going to hurt Americans even more?
And I think that's one of the big things. And we actually talked about this in our previous episode with Amanda briefly, when we were like trying to figure out, like, what is this administration trying to accomplish? And all of this, I mean, the crux of it is a battle against China. And then we also talked about, like, with Canada, like, if you're going to put money on anyone, your money's going to be on the United States to win the trade war. Because not only are we such a large country, we're also consuming a lot from other countries, and the balance is disproportionate. So in that sense, other countries are much more dependent on us economically for what we purchase than we are on them for what they purchase from us, meaning that we create more revenue for them.
Mm-hmm.
So the question is that how long can they withstand not gaining that revenue?
Yeah.
And how long we can deal with an alleged and or predicted rise in prices, because that's the other debate. There's multiple debates going on here about how the tariffs are being worked out and also about whether or not this will end up in the consumer's pocket. So,
yeah. I mean, it has to, right?
Here's the thing. And that's why I will eventually, but it's a timing situation again.
Will we get to the point where we're being taxed before they capitulate and start to kind of say, all right, we'll ease up? It's a game of bluff, really. Like, he's taking a chance that all of them are going to see this and be like, yeah, Trump usually does what he says. And he's trying to make a deal here.
It's just very typical. Like, I see this as of him, of what he would maybe typically do when he's doing some kind of aggressive negotiation in his past. It's just, this is at a global scale. And typically it's just him making the decision. Now, not only is it just him, but it's affecting so many more people. Like, typically it was just him and his employees. Now it's him and, I would argue, the entire world. So the betting here, like, is a lot more significant, or like the outcome. So we talked about, like, because whether or not this is going to raise prices. Now, obviously, in theory, yes, it's going to potentially raise prices. However, I think initially I thought, like, this whole buildup of Liberation Day, and this is just me pontificating, okay? I don't know. I don't have a direct line to the president. But, you know, he started talking about tariffs, and he's been talking about tariffs for a while. And then he set this, like, deadline for Liberation Day. Mm-hmm. And I'm doing air quotes because I really do not like calling it Liberation Day. I think it's ridiculous, frankly.
Yeah. I think that's like a pie in the sky kind of
something
to make everybody feel better about a very nerve-wracking situation when it comes to, I mean, we're trying to recover the economy under Biden. And this feels like a, I hope it works out.
Yeah, I know.
This is a choice. Yeah.
So I think, initially, I thought he was kind of holding off a little bit on doing the whole tariff thing. And he was like, we're going to do it on April 2nd. Because I thought that he was maybe behind the scenes negotiating with other countries. And I thought when he was going to do the announcement yesterday that he was going to be like, okay, these are our reciprocal tariffs. But, you know, like, for example, these countries already knew that they were coming. We negotiated ahead of time. I got these handful of countries that we've come to terms and we made negotiations on. This is evidence of maybe you guys should also do negotiations, right? And I thought that's how
it felt to me, very hurried. I don't know.
It didn't.
They may surprise us, and it will just, like, this within the next 3 days, all of these countries are gonna be like, oh my gosh, yeah, we've seen the light. No more tariffs on America. I will eat crow, but I just feel like this is.
Well, and there's another factor that contributes to that. But before I get to that, so I initially thought that was what was going to happen. So the way it went down and how it was actually announced, I was kind of like disappointed, I guess. I was like, okay, well,
what would you have wanted? What would you have wanted to see?
Just exactly what I said. I would have thought maybe something had been going on somewhere else. So, and that's why there was that delay. So you can have this evidence of these people, these countries.
Much more like targeted. Like, these are the, this
or
is very
at least
intentional.
Like something that had like more
meat on the bone.
Yeah. So that's initially what I thought it was going to be. Clearly, that's not what happened.
No. And then it kind of turned into a press conference. That's essentially,
I mean,
we started talking about, it's Trump.
Yeah.
But it was definitely like, oh, so we're talking about the election now. And the border.
Was freaking ridiculous. I was like, seriously, dude, why are we doing this?
Right.
But to answer your questions on whether or not this is going to raise prices, I think, first of all, it's not going to raise prices immediately. It's not like we're going to wake up tomorrow and the prices have gone up immediately. Right. I also think that a lot of companies, and I know specifically, for example, like the auto industry and dealerships,
they're happy about it.
They're happy about it, but they also brought in inventory in anticipation of these tariffs. So they wanted to bring them in, and they're going to try and keep them at the price that they brought them in. So I don't think we'll necessarily start to see significant increases across the board.
Yeah.
Maybe for another 3 months or something like that. That is my personal estimation. It could be shorter. It could be a month or something like that. It really depends on what company, what industry, and what they imported And obviously you can't do that with food because you can't hold it for whatever months. But yeah. Depending on the industry, they
no, but definitely, like I said, auto, like cars and I think electronics and,
yes,
and
things like that.
Targeted.
So we're not going to necessarily products. See those price increases immediately. So the question is that what is the runway that we have to, because I was watching interviews with Scott Bessent on Fox with Brett Baier. And it appears to me where he's saying, let's just hold on a minute, because he's asking, what would you advise countries to do? And he's basically stand back. Don't panic. Don't do anything drastic. Let's just wait and see.
President in the Rose Garden. Let's get reaction to the president's tariff plan and progress of his big, beautiful bill going forward. Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent joins us now. Thank you for being here.
Right. Good to see you.
It was a big day. The president calls it Liberation Day. You know, we showed the markets before, but if you saw the post-market reaction, it was kind of down across the board. You know, people are looking at their 401ks and they worry about it. What do you say to them today?
Brett, I say that what we are doing is we're setting the stage for long-term economic growth, that we were on our way to a financial crisis. You know, I used to teach a history of financial crises, and with that gigantic government spending, it was unsustainable. You look back in 1998, you look back in 07, right before it looked great, that everything collapsed. So, I mean, it looked great right before everything collapsed. So we have taken us off that trajectory, and we are putting ourselves back onto a sound trajectory.
You said 10% over 10 years would be $2.5 trillion coming in. You know, you look at this list of all these countries, and there's some policy decisions here. China is at 34%, added to the 20% already, so that's 54% on Chinese goods.
Yes.
Are they going to come back with something big?
Well, we'll see what they do. Is my advice to every country right now is do not retaliate, sit back, take it in, let's see how it goes, because if you retaliate, there will be escalation. If you don't retaliate, this is the high watermark.
So to me, that means, again, like when you're dealing with Trump, let it cook. Let's see what happens. Let's give it a minute. Don't do anything drastic.
Yep.
So my hope is, obviously, that it's like, well, he said he was going to do it. Well, holy
and he did it.
Crud, he did it. Now people need to react. Now, of course, you're going to have some countries are going to be like defiant. You know what I mean? And then other countries are going to be like, OK, let's negotiate here. We'll see. I mean, for example, I heard Doug Ford, the PM of Ontario, say, if you guys drop the tariffs, we'll drop the tariffs. Israel already ditched all U.S. tariffs.
Which I thought was kind of interesting in the first place that Israel had.
I was like, why are you tariffs on us? We're like, like Ukraine tariffing.
Yeah.
Like,
and I mean, I'm sure that some of these agreements.
I feel like if we're giving you
while,
some kind of like protectionist funding or whatever,
just
like,
drop all the tariffs on us. Come on. It's an act of goodwill. Australia's, I think it's a prime minister. Yeah, because it's not a king. What is it in Australia?
It's a prime, it's a prime minister.
He came out and just not happy. He's this is basically going to hurt Americans the most. This is not an act of friendship, which is so interesting, too, because everybody wants to be our friend.
I'm so sick of the act of friendship.
Like, we're not friends. We're all countries. We can like each other more than you like someone else.
Look, I'm going to side note this whole like weaponization of, but I thought we were friends. Like,
Stop.
Sometimes, even like with the bestest of friends, I have to consider my family.
You have to have some boundaries. Interests.
Yeah.
Yep. Like,
So stop.
Yeah.
Stop it.
Yeah. That whole thing is kind of like, especially when dudes say it, I'm like, this is a little nauseating. Like, we are countries in the world. We're not like hanging out. Okay. Please.
A cup of tea. No.
Yeah.
No.
But he spoke last night and was just basically, no, I don't like this. This is not friendly. This is not nice. And it's, basically, Trump has upended the global economy, and it's all going to suffer, and Americans are going to suffer the most. And I was like, okay, like you said, let's wait. And just, I mean, you're mad, so we can tell. You know what I mean?
The goal is to up, and like the goal, this is
to reorder. It is to change and reorder. And he's been doing it from the moment he got in the office, and people are very uneasy with that. I think that if world leaders were honest, they actually respect the fact that he comes in and he's very loyal, but his allegiance to any one country is, it's fragile. Like, he thinks of America first, and this is, in his mind, the way to posture America. Look, we're not going to take all this from you guys. Kind of like how J.D. Vance was talking about Europe. So long, we have done everything for you guys, and you make fun of us, you take advantage of us, and you expect us to do everything for you. And we're done with this. And it kind of feels like that's a little bit of the posture here with Trump, where he's just kind of like, I'm through letting the entire world tariff us. So let's come to the table.
I think that's one of the reasons that I get really annoyed with this all. Like, I'm annoyed with supporters of the president of the administration who are just like flat out, this is going to be awesome.
No, it might not be.
It may not.
You can say you want this because the long run.
I want it to work.
The long run implications would, I think what they're hoping the long term implication of this is that it will entice and encourage like industrialization, creation, both job creation and just like creativity. It will encourage people to bring their manufacturing into America and make America a bastion for the rest of the world instead of us outsourcing literally everything. I mean, there's so many different things that could happen around on the global stage that if something happened to a specific country, America's in trouble because we import things from other countries that I don't buy that we can't manufacture our own chips here. Like, we have to be dependent on Taiwan. Of course, it's going to take time for us to build up to where we can manufacture these things in our own country. But why aren't we doing that? Why haven't we been doing that all along? And I don't like it that we're so dependent on the global economy. I would like more manufacturing here. I would love it, but it takes time. So I am with you that the loyalist wing of the party that were Trump
like the celebration of Liberation Day. Like, it
he can
insane.
Not only do no wrong, but in fact, the things he does that
are just
we
the
all
most amazing.
Yeah. No, you can say, I'm nervous. I have some questions. That's totally normal. We should be able to do that. But there are some people who just, I mean, he is all sparkles and unicorns all the time for them, and they refuse to ask questions.
It's also on the other extreme in that this is the end of everything.
Yes.
And it's like, well, I also
like
don't...
we said, no, we said that on the last podcast. He could literally facilitate a cure for cancer and
it won't matter.
Democrats would still be like, it wasn't him. He didn't do anything.
They would argue like, you're negatively affecting the pharmaceutical company. Like,
yeah, exactly. Look at what you've done to all these hospitals who now have to close their cancer wings. How dare you?
What?
It's wild.
Okay. Now, I do really want to talk about, because this is what I'm just going to put them on blast, because let me tell you that this does not feel, I'm talking about the administration. In addition to like how it's been rolled out, the fact that it's kind of blanketed, it remains to be seen that if this is like an aggressive push to force these countries, and not only are you trying to force them into negotiation, but you're also trying, there's like a two, because remember, countries do not produce anything, okay? Mm-hmm. All of this like claim of Biden created all these jobs. No, you're not producing anything, dude. You're just spending taxpayer money and giving it to people by creating some job where they can push paper around in X department, okay? Mm-hmm. Countries don't produce anything. They incentivize production, and they can incentivize production via these economic like lever pulling that we're seeing here. Mm-hmm. Getting rid of regulations, tax benefits, tariffs, like all of these things can be used as tools to either to bring in or protect industry in your country. So what's hoping here is that there's going to be a negotiation with countries in order to lower tariffs. Also, he's not going to necessarily want to do that with everyone, because he wants companies to come to the United States and start to produce here in the United States.
Yeah.
So it's, and part of this entire plan too is to fund no taxes on tips, no taxes on Social Security. The goal of not taxing Americans that earn less than $150,000 a year. There's all of these other things that he is, in addition, trying to do. Like, he's trying to bring us back to that old school original tariff production before we ever, like, way of generating revenue, before we ever turn to income tax revenue.
Yeah.
Which is like really old school. Okay.
Yes.
Super, super old school.
Very.
So that's kind of like where he's trying to get us. However, there's a discussion happening right now on X about how these reciprocal tariffs were calculated.
Yeah, this kind of blew my mind when you told me about it. Why don't you share with our audience how the numbers were?
And what I shared it in my...
It's a theory.
Well, and that's why, if you guys have noticed during this entire conversation, I have been saying what X country allegedly charges us in tariffs.
Yeah.
So the thought is, and look, if you were to ask my husband how good I am at understanding math and finance and just those general concepts, no bueno, okay? This is not at all my wheelhouse, okay? But I went investigating because the claim was there's an account and his name is James, how would you pronounce that last
name? It is a weird last name.
Okay. Swarick.
Swarecki.
Okay.
Yeah.
So who is James Swarecki? He wrote with the financial page at the New Yorker. He also contributed Fast Company and The Atlantic. So it does give you a little bit of an idea of where he lands on his support. However, he shared on X yesterday. I'm going to read it to you. He says, just figured out where these fake tariff rates come from. They didn't actually calculate tariff rates plus non-tariff barriers as they said they did. Instead, for every country, they just took our trade deficit with that country and divided it by the country's exports to us. So we have a $17.9 billion trade deficit with Indonesia. Its exports to us are $28 billion. So 17.9 divided by 28 equals 64%, which Trump claims is the tariff rate Indonesia charges us. This is extraordinary nonsense if this is it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So then I was like, is it? Because that one's kind of
that
ridiculous.
Seems interesting.
Now, because I am not a tariff math expert, I went to AI and I was like, please evaluate this and tell me, is this correct? Is what he's claiming correct? And of course, I watched it. It did all the little math things. It pulled different countries in. It factored all kinds of stuff that I don't understand. And it basically said, yes, that is correct.
It is. Which is one way to do it.
Now, in addition to that, the White House Deputy Press Secretary replied to it with, no, we literally calculated tariff and non-tariff barriers and then shared a link from the Office of the U.S. Trade Representative for the president on reciprocal tariff calculations. So then I went, because I don't know what I'm talking about.
Back to Grok.
Went back to Grok. I shared the link, the text of this, and I asked it to evaluate that and compare it to the claims that Swarecki are making. And it basically said, it's essentially the same thing. Yes.
Yeah.
So
it's wild.
That to me is, yeah, it's wild. It's kind of insane. I don't know. And I even asked Grok, I'm like, does this even make any sense? Is this kind of insane? And Grok was like, yeah, this is weird.
It's unconventional.
It's unconventional. I don't know. So that kind of adds to this feeling of
slap together.
Yeah.
And you should see Mercedes. She's like itching her neck. We're just confused. We are just as confused as everybody else. And trust me, we both voted for President Trump. We would love if in several months, this is a net benefit and it has done what it is supposed to do, which in our opinion would be for countries to come to the table and be like, you know what? Let's chat about this. Let's remove tariffs. Let's work nice. Let's be nice to each other. Let's be besties. Since everybody wants to be friends these days, that seems to be the thing. Everybody's all concerned about friendship now. But we are normal humans who pay bills. And so we're concerned too. And when you read something like this, oh, is that how they?
Is yeah, that how it they doesn't instill a whole bunch it of confidence. Does,
no.
And here's the deal. I'm going to be real frank. Like, unfortunately, I hate to say this because it's annoying, but unfortunately, as the Republican Party, you need to have your stuff so zipped
tight.
Up tight.
Yeah.
In order to make sure, because any kind of misstep, anything that can be given a voice as either being incompetent or not knowing, because I can't give you a full opinion on this because it doesn't give me a whole lot of confidence.
But it almost feels like something like if someone said, okay, Rachel, can you please come up with some tariffs
it's,
for
yeah,
all
sure.
the countries?
I'm
and I was like,
this.
Okay, well, I'm going to do this fun little math problem. And that's the number. Those are the numbers we're going to use. And So, and maybe it'll work. I don't know. I am totally willing in a few months to be like, yep, they understood something I did not about it. But for me, it's looking at this. I don't know. It feels unsophisticated almost.
Yes.
And maybe that's fine.
And maybe it needs to be. Because, yeah. Let's be completely honest.
I mean, a lot of the sophisticated ideas we've been using
have not been working.
So.
And that's the thing is the question is, and I would say to any person who's doing this, that's really just trying to earnestly figure out, like, how do I feel about it? Regardless of where it stands, what was happening in the past was not working. And a lot of people will be like, oh, do you regret? I was like, no, I don't regret my choice because I know exactly what Harris was going to be doing. She was going to continue to grow the government. She was going to continue to print money. She was going to continue into the deficit. Do you understand what I'm saying? Like, everything that we were experiencing that was bad was going to continue.
And get worse.
The question now remains is, will this new experiment and this very large gamble work or will it go bust? And remains to be seen.
I want them to prove us wrong. I want them to succeed. That's what I want.
I do too. And there are also two different type of people. There are people that are risk averse and there are people that are willing to take a risk for a full benefit, like payout.
Yeah.
And then you also have to determine where you fall on that spectrum and how comfortable you are with that. Most people are risk averse, which is why most normal politicians would not make this attempt. They would not be doing this because
they want to assure that they're going to get reelected. And I say this quite a bit on social media. Nothing's going to change if nothing changes. And
correct.
Trump grinds against that. He likes to come in and shuffle the cards and try new things. And that makes people uneasy, especially in a town like DC, where everybody wants to continue as is and keep their positions of power. And that feels comfortable for them. Trump doesn't operate like that. And if we want things to improve, if we want our economy to turn a corner, which is why a lot of people voted for Trump, economy was a top three for most people who voted for Trump, then we got to be willing to take some risks, right?
Yeah. So it just remains to see. Now,
so he's your guy.
The messaging that we're going to hear, of course, the Democrats are going to be like,
they're already losing their minds. This is it. The economy is shutting down. They're telling this is going to most negatively impact the lower income families. That's it. You're not going to be able to afford to feed your children anymore. They're really taking it to the limit. But they do that with literally every single subject. So it's
honestly
to be expected.
If you're a listener of this podcast, you have to know that that is just like the MO.
Yeah.
And at some point, it needs to become noise, but not completely tuned out, because it's not to say that a criticism that they make would be completely invalid. For example, like this post that I just discovered late last night, early this morning, this is a valid criticism. You can't shut them out and then not, if you're in a, what do you call it, sound bubble or whatever, like
echo chamber.
Thank you. Like you wouldn't know about this. So now I will say that there are some positive signs. Inflation is going down. There's been a ton of investment recently in
tons
the United
of investment
States.
Like in the United States.
$500 billion from Apple, TSMC, $100 billion for 5 Arizona chip plants, Eli Lilly, $27 billion for drug plants, Johnson & Johnson, $55 billion for manufacturing.
This is a lot.
Some movement coming back, and that is a hope. And I will say that not only, I think the challenge here is that if I were to give another criticism to the administration before like we move on, is maybe the sequence of events. So why do we have to lead with tariffs? Why can't we? I mean, I guess you can argue that we didn't lead with tariffs because of DOGE. There's deregulation. They're trying to claw back money. You know what I mean? However, would it have been nice, for example, like the taxes and the big bills, those benefits to be already legislated and worked out. A lot of those have been really challenging because of the judges and the activism that we've been seeing from some of the district court judges. So I really feel like the tariff situation, especially this broad, would have been better as like the third leg But I don't know.
We don't. I don't think anybody.
I'm no expert.
I think that Trump is, he is a, like you said, he's a businessman, he's a risk taker, and I think he's hopeful.
He's rising an optimist.
Tide. He is. And I think that there's a rising tide of possibility, or the feeling that change and renewal, American renewal, is possible, that will lower people's inhibitions to these kinds of wacky ideas. I don't think tariffs in and of itself is wacky. We just have never had a president who has stood up in the Rose Garden or wherever they were and said, okay, we're going to slap tariffs on these 80 countries all at one time. It's definitely out of the box thinking, which we've talked about before. This is Trump. So maybe people are going to get on board and be like, it's Trump. You got to work with him. You got to let's come to the table. So that's
hoping. And I will say his team is not like Lutnick and Bessette, especially. Like,
they're not Bessette idiots.
Is not an idiot.
Yeah.
So, and I would definitely recommend, I'm going to include it in the show notes. He did like a 15-minute interview with Caitlin Collins, and I think it was a really good interview. Like he was, yeah. I think he was fair in his responses. Perfect. He seemed confident in his responses, even though Bessette has this weird kind of stutter that maybe like some people translate, but it's consistent. Like he does that all the time. So if you've never seen him speak, like that's just the way he talks. So it remains to be seen. I think it is fair for people to be nervous. I think my encouragement will be hopeful. Pray for the country. Let's hope
it works. Well, they always said, let it cook. Let it sit. Let it marinate.
Just let's wait. What we do know is that what was happening, not working. Okay?
No, that's the truth. 100%. We're hopeful Republicans that voted for Trump, and we will call out the crazy. But we also think that America needs to get used to trying some new things in order to achieve what the majority of Americans said that they wanted in November, which is a better economy, safer borders.
I mean, he's doing that for sure.
Safer he's doing borders. A lot of things he said he would do, and successfully. So let's have some faith and give it a minute.
We will see what happens. Let it cook. All right. So speaking of criticizing our own.
Yeah. Let's go there.
Let's talk about what is going on in the House right now. And this one, especially considering that our audience is mostly women, this one was a hot topic. And I think it's
there was
also
a lot of dissension in my comment section.
Well, and about it's this actually one. Really kind of funny because so if you guys don't know what's going on in the House right now, obviously we have a very narrow majority, which thankfully got a little bit bigger because we won the two special elections in Florida. But we have a very narrow majority in the House and have a very short runway to get legislation passed and get things locked down before we end up going into the midterms. Mm-hmm. And possibly, hopefully not, losing the House. I really don't think it's going to happen, but, you know, it could happen. We have to be...
We just have to make sure that we are very careful about how we tread, because this could all go sideways so fast if we lose all that. Honestly, if we lose the House, it really kind of doesn't matter.
It puts an end to everything.
You can be excited about Trump, but if you're excited about Trump, then we need to be pushing hard to keep the House in 2026.
So, and getting things done. Now, Johnson has a really big challenge because of this narrow majority. And within the Republican Party, we have some rabble-rousers.
Some factions. Yeah, we do.
Specifically, the House Freedom Caucus, which a lot of them I thoroughly love and enjoy.
You're a libertarian at heart.
Yeah.
So there so is, like, you have a soft spot for the Massey's. Like I love Massey too.
Yeah.
But I mean, he's predictably.
Burchett is one of my favorites.
Now, like, Burchett, he voted.
I know.
Surprise. What did he do? He voted with the Democrats.
However,
talk to me about it, because I was like,
what?
He did
for an interesting reason, and I did not like it, but also his point was valid, but he kind of disappointed me, even though he's literally one of my favorites. So, because he is, I'm in Tennessee. He's not mine represent because he's up in Knoxville, but still. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so yesterday there is this, and I researched this because the other complication is that there's a lot of maneuvering that happens in the House that most Americans don't understand. There's like how rules are presented, who can bring a bill up. There's all kinds of things going on. So there is this strategy. I don't know if strategy is the right word, or this tool. Let's put it this way. It's called a discharge petition. Mm-hmm. So what happens is that the House leadership, which is Speaker of the House, Johnson, and also Scalise, Steve Scalise, mm-hmm. are the heads of the House right now, because we are, the Republicans are the majority party. And they can make the determination of what bills can make it on the House floor for a vote. And they can say which ones don't. Pelosi used this
all the time.
All the time. Like, she was very skilled at this. And this is very much a lot of political maneuvering, because it's a huge game of chess. It's about whether or not you have the votes, whether or not you want the bill to pass, like the politics of the time, like everything. A lot of things come into play. Now, there is this tool. It's called a discharge petition. And the discharge petition allows a bill that the leadership is not willing to bring to the floor for a vote.
It forces it.
Yeah. If you get half, I believe it's 218.
A certain amount of signatures.
Correct.
So, and okay, let's get into it, because some Republicans.
This all started off with Representative Brittany Peterson from Colorado. She is a Democrat. You might, if you were paying attention recently.
I was gonna say, if you're watching television, you've seen a blonde-haired lady holding the baby. That is who it is.
Which I'm like, you're on the House floor with your baby.
Stop it.
But let's not get sidetracked, okay?
We'll get there.
So Anna Paulina Luna, who is a representative, a Republican representative out of Florida, did the discharge petition, got her 218 signatures, which would then force it onto the House floor for a vote.
And what was it that they were pressing the issue on?
The issue that she was pressing was proxy voting for women and fathers, by the way.
Yep. That's something that nobody's talking about.
Everybody's like, for maternity leave, for 12 weeks.
It is also for men whose spouses have had children for 12 weeks.
For 12 weeks. Okay.
Yeah.
Mind you, I think representatives are actually like in D.C. for votes for 140 something days out of the year. Like, they're not there the full year. Plus,
they're not senators. Yeah.
Yeah. So out of the 140 plus days, if you have a baby, you also want to be out those 12 days.
12 weeks.
I'm sorry, 12 weeks, which is pretty significant out of that chunk. And that's not even factoring in any other reason that you might not be available. Because constitutionally, you are supposed to be, the argument is, now there is a debate about this, but the debate is that you are supposed to be present in order to do votes. Anna Paulina has attempted to make the case that that wasn't the case. Johnson is very much against this. And by the way, so is the House Freedom Caucus. The House Freedom Caucus is so against it that Anna Paulina left.
She dropped out of the Freedom Caucus the night before this discharge petition. This petition was pushed forward. She had dropped out. She's like, I have tried to be nice. I am loyal to the Freedom Caucus, but they have not been loyal to me. I'm out of here. And I think it's really, like, I think it's that she was going to bring this forward. And they're like, no, we're not supporting that.
Yeah. And, and they have been very specific on, we are not going to support it. We're not going to vote on it.
Yeah.
Now, the other thing is that apparently the House Freedom Caucus are trying so hard to force it that they're saying they're not going to vote on anything. We're not going to do this. Okay. We're not going to partake. So when, now there was like some maneuvering going on where, because Johnson was trying to kill it. Let me see if I can get the sequence of events going on.
He threw something in.
So he did a sneaky kind of play where he had the Rules Committee, which is his people, tuck in a little detail there.
A poison pill, if you will.
Yeah, which was unrelated. So the vote was about setting rules for other bills like the SAVE Act. So by combining these two, he added a line that would kill Luna's discharge petition and block any proxy voting talk for good if it passed. Because it was like, if you vote for this rule, then you're also going to be voting to include this discharge petition. So he was trying to attach the two with something that you don't want to kill.
Right.
With something that you do want to kill.
Yeah.
To kind of like force you to kill.
And you'll get rid of it as an option.
Now, specifically for individuals like Burchett, his argument is Anna Paulina did the work. She got the signatures.
We should vote on it.
We should vote on it.
You are making big headlines across the country. So let's get right to the elephant in the room. I'd like to get your thoughts on the pushback that you're receiving on your bipartisan resolution that would have allowed lawmakers who are new parents to vote by proxy. Has this really turned into a bigger issue than you expected? Speaker Johnson sent everybody home and said, forget all of this.
I mean, the fact is that Speaker Johnson ended up getting community noted by X, which, as you know, is formerly known as Twitter, with the correct information. And really the attack here, and I put out a letter earlier, is that, look, you have some of the most conservative Republicans in Congress that said you have to respect the process of collecting signatures and allowing a piece of legislation like this to come to the ground, to the floor, because that's the rules that we agreed to, right? So, like, let's say you have a bill on term limits, for example. Do you know how many times people have introduced legislation on term limits and leadership will not bring it to the floor? It's happening all the time. In fact, I'm thinking about doing a discharge petition on term limits as well. But the point is that what they try to do is they try to, in order to block this, attach it to the SAVE Act, which, as you know, we've had Congress now for over, 70 days, and we've put nothing on the floor to do anything for President Trump's agenda until 24 hours before they, 24 hours after they realized that my discharge petition was successful. So, you know, look, the argument here is that you have the Supreme Court that's ruled that this is legal. I've never voted by proxy, but what you're seeing is even Mike Johnson, some of the most vocal advocates against vote by proxy, all voted by proxy. In fact, Mike Johnson voted over 4 times, as well as a majority of leadership, and a majority of the people in Congress that are making videos and posts all about this all voted by proxy. What I'm saying is we have the slimmest majority in U.S. history, and you've only ever had now 13 with Kat Kamek, who's a Republican, pregnant. She's going to be the 14th legislator in U.S. history to ever give birth. If she can't come up to vote because there's a medical complication within the first couple of days of her delivering, that can, and it has a very big likelihood, stop her from being able to carry out President Trump's agenda. We need every vote that we can get.
Congressman Luna, what do you make of the argument, and we just had one of your colleagues on moments ago, who said that voting by proxy is unconstitutional. Do you buy that argument? Do you agree?
So I actually specifically addressed this, and in the Constitution it says members must be present to establish a quorum, and in the language that I wrote, I said members shall only be able to vote by proxy without establishing a quorum, meaning I removed that, so it's in line with the Constitution, but not to mention the amicus brief that went up to the Supreme Court in the 117th Congress was actually ruled against by the Supreme Court. They said Congress has the authority to govern themselves, and so this would be part of the governing process.
And he does not like the fact that he feels that Johnson is playing dirty tricks in order to not allow it to be brought up for a vote. Dirty tricks like this happen all the time.
Well, and then they should go, I mean, he should lobby for it to be passed, that the rules have to change in the House.
And it doesn't necessarily mean, it's an option. It doesn't necessarily mean either that Burchett would vote to pass proxy voting.
Yeah, he's just saying we should vote.
Yes.
If she did all the work to advance this and it has been advanced and there's enough support to vote on it, we should vote. And I get that. I mean, I respect that position. But I mean, Johnson and his people are going to use what they can to
not do it, because he doesn't think it's going to be beneficial, or he thinks.
And there was a lot of people who have lots of opinions about the proxy voting, and very strong opinions, both Republican and Democrat. And lots of Republicans in my comments and my DMs were like, oh no, if you want to say you're pro-family, we should definitely have proxy voting. I mean, I totally disagree with that.
But yeah, I was like, I don't agree with that either.
Right. But still, it's not clear cut Republican, Democrat. I mean, it's definitely slanted one way, but I mean, there's people who definitely think it should be allowed.
Now, the other thing is that there was a big debate going on because Johnson basically put an end
to all voting for the whole
week. To all voting for the entire week.
He sent people home. Bye.
And he was saying that basically we can't continue because of the rule change.
Well, it's a very disappointing result on the floor there. A handful of Republicans joined with all the Democrats to take down a rule that's rarely done. It's very unfortunate in this case. 96% of House Republicans voted against proxy voting because they believe it's unconstitutional and they agree that it would open a Pandora's box. And so that's what we just saw. Let me just make this clear. That rule being brought down means that we can't have any further action on the floor this week. That means we will not be voting on the SAVE Act for election integrity. We will not be voting on the rogue judges who are attacking President Trump's agenda. We will not be taking down these terrible Biden policies with the CRA votes. All that was just wiped off the table. It's very unfortunate. We'll regroup and come back, and we'll have to do this again.
Now, Pauline is saying that's not true. If he wanted to push it, if he wanted to have this vote, we could do the vote. Now, here's the problem, though. The House Freedom Caucus, which is a pretty good chunk of the vote, especially considering when you have such a narrow majority, is like saying, no, absolutely not. We are not going to partake. We're not going to vote. They'll probably vote like present, as in like they're not even there, which then narrows the win, and it gives more leverage to the Democrats, obviously. Now, clearly, the Democrats are completely fine with this drama because it's delaying everything. For example, the SAVE Act, any kind of legislation.
And also, they can paint it as, look at these Republicans aren't doing their job. I watched it. It had no more happen than 5 minutes later, USA Today and another lefty outlet have their reporters walking around the halls of the Capitol, and they're empty, and they're like, see, look at Republicans. They don't want to work for you. They're all about infighting. And then Speaker Johnson sends everybody home. They're not even doing their jobs. I mean, they wait for opportunities like this because they can totally paint it like Republicans, all they do is fight, and they're ineffective, and they don't do what
Which is not
Congress
a completely invalid criticism because, like, I mean, this is not
was
the
Wednesday.
Time.
They still had 3 days of work that they needed to do, and some would argue over the weekend.
And the thing is that, like, it would be unwise of him to bring things to the floor for a vote if he doesn't think he has the votes to pass it, because then he's putting the legislation at risk. So
to kill him indefinitely. He needs to wait for a more stable moment.
So the question here is, who's really the drama? Is it Paulina for pushing this proxy voting? And at a time when there's so many other things that are so important, is this really the time to have this battle? Not to mention that typically this petition is done when you aren't the party in power.
Why now? Honestly, because there are so many other options. It's not like, I mean, truly, I get that this is, anytime we're dealing with motherhood and having babies, moms come out and are just very passionate that all sorts of dispensations need to be made for mothers. So it's already a very heightened topic. Oh, you're a mother, then you should be able to do all the things, and we should break all the rules so that you are to be included. And I have problems with that line of thinking. But it's not like this is a situation without a solution aside from voting. I mean, there's so many options for these women. They are Congress people. I guarantee they have options. They have grandmothers that can help them. They have husbands that can help them.
They
have free daycare on the Hill for representatives.
They allow you to bring your child on the House floor. Like, now I did hear, because Johnson, like, he isn't like, I don't want to let you come. That isn't the motivation here. You have to understand that proxy voting in concept of, oh, we're just going to do it for mothers and fathers who just had a child. Why? Or because they had a difficult pregnancy and they need to take a break or need to stay home or something like that. You can make that argument for anybody because they have become ill, because they're not doing well. And then considering, look, this is my thought, considering that we're having a increasingly aging Congress, like, I'm thinking about Dianne Feinstein right now. So Dianne Feinstein could be sitting doing, I mean, God rest her soul because she's gone, but like, she could have been sitting at home doing proxy voting. We don't know who's voting on her.
Who was that one representative that they found out later she had been in an old folks home for 6 months? I almost would bet the house that there was some proxy voting happening there. I think proxy voting slippery slope is, it could be a real thing. And I don't.
I mean, we just had a proxy president for 4 years. Yeah. Like, why are we going to want to facilitate this? Do you understand what I'm saying?
People want to make it so much harder than it has to be because it's dealing with motherhood and parenting. And that's such a hot topic for so many people. And they're trying to use arguments like, then you're eliminating the opportunity for women of childbearing ages to be part of Congress. And we always talk about wanting younger people in, but now look at, you're not going to support them. And there's so many arguments that people are trying to make. They're trying to string together the whole like pro-natalist movement and how babies are good, but then look at how you're penalizing women who want to do this. And I'm just over here like, this is not difficult. it's not hard to say or hard to accept that there are some jobs in our country that you can't dial into. And a congressional member, you know what you're signing up for when you sign up for it. And you know the stakes. You also know that you're not just representing yourself. A lot of people came to me and they were like, there's all kinds of businesses and jobs where men get to proxy vote for their businesses and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, okay, but that's their business. And I would have issues with that too if I was on the board. But the point is when you're a congressional member, you don't just represent your family or yourself. You represent all of your constituents. They voted to put you there. And then you need to be there to vote on their behalf. And like you said, I mean, there's so many
arguments. It's a very short window of time.
It is a very short window of time. And also, it's like you said, you can bring your baby. You can drop your baby off in the free childcare that is being afforded to you while you run down, take your vote, and then go get your baby. You can wear your baby in a sling to go vote. You can ask your husband to come alongside you.
And by the way,
there's a few minutes while you go take your vote.
There is word that Johnson is willing to, I don't know, I don't want to say benefits necessarily, but to make accommodations for mothers. So like,
what other accommodations need to be made?
Like having a breastfeeding room near the house floor or something like that. Also allowing some funding or taxpayer paid funding to facilitate if you need to bring the baby with you for travel and that sort of thing.
Delivering the message.
I just don't attack the messenger.
I know. I heard a lot of people in the comment section who were like, why do they get free childcare? And why are all these accommodations? But I don't get that. I had to make the decision to go back to work after 4 to 6 weeks. So I think those are all valid. I think it just highlights how, to me, this seems very, I hate the word privileged, but it's like, you aren't a Congress member. You knew what you were getting into. Accommodations can be requested for all manner of things, but that doesn't mean that if you don't get those accommodations or they don't change a rule for you, that it's an oppressive act. No, this is just what the job requires. And people for all of time, for the history of our country, have had to make great sacrifice to be a representative in Congress and in the military and in law enforcement and in all these different jobs where you sign up, you know exactly what you're signing up for, and it's a sacrifice.
And I think, honestly, this is a side note, but I'm a little annoyed. Like, I get Paulina's a young mother. However, like, you're just giving the Democrats a tool. Yeah. You're giving them a tool to slow down the agenda.
You and I are looking at it at two different things. I haven't even gotten to my irritation with her about that yet. I'm irritated that this bill is even being brought because she had to have known it was going to be factious and that it was going to cause dissension in the ranks of the Republican Party. And she also, I think that it's like you said, she's a young mother. And when you are a young mother, there's a part of you, I think, where you think that the world has to revolve around you because it is difficult. And I remember feeling that it's hard and you're trying to learn how to navigate all these different things, but you get to this end of it and it's no, this is just life. You have kids and you have to give up things and you have to reorient yourself to the world. And you have to know that certain jobs come with certain things that you're going to have to deal with, like everybody else has to.
And just the whole thing, I'm not opposed necessarily to there being like a daycare or there's breastfeeding. Like if you, and I'm not talking about necessarily the Congress, like, you know, where people are like, my business doesn't have that. Like I think maybe more businesses should have that.
Yeah, we can talk about that for sure. Yeah.
For their employees. You know what I mean?
Yes.
I'm not opposed to that at all. Yeah. And I really do think absolutely that we have created a world as of recently, especially the last decade or two, it's not supportive of families and it's not welcoming to children. So I am not opposed to creating a culture and just situations in general that are more welcoming and more open to that.
Right.
But then I'm like, it might sound extreme, but do I think every job should do that? No.
Right.
I don't.
And that's just the thing is like, Congress can say, no, we're not going to do proxy voting. And that does not mean that they are being anti-family. In fact, like Johnson said, and has been hinted, they're trying to make even more accommodations. The fact that there's free childcare, a free daycare that would cost in D.C. thousands of dollars a month. The fact that that's an option, that's very pro-family in that sense, if that's how they want to look at it. That's what she's talking about. And so this is not anti-family. This is just the job. You're a congressperson. This is just the job. It always has been. It's not like John Adams and George Washington. They were gone from their families for months at a time.
And it's, I mean,
this has always been what it's been. You have the most accommodations in history right now. You have tons.
I'm really irritated with her.
I know. I'm irritated because the messaging is so sloppy. It's not like Congress is telling you you can't have babies if you're a congressional member. No, they're saying you can bring your baby. We'll pay for your baby to have childcare and we'll let you carry the baby on the floor. Why can't you do that? That's fine. Maybe we'll build you a room next door where you can go breastfeed, because that was another thing I heard from people. They're accommodating you all over the place. All they're doing is saying, if you're going to be
like, this is the job,
you need to just come vote. Just come vote. And I don't understand how everybody wants to make this. And plus, by the way, I don't think it's unfair to say or think about, maybe just think for a minute, do you want to be in Congress if you're going to have a bunch of little babies? Like, I get that some people get in there and they have children, but you have to understand that that's going to bump up against your responsibilities to your constituents and to America. This is not a job that you had to go into. You went into it and you know what it entailed. It's hard having a bunch of kids. You have to know you're going to sacrifice things. So take it from me. I don't sign up for all kinds of stuff. I haven't done half the things that have been offered to me to do because I knew I wouldn't be able to deliver on it, or I would end up resenting the job because I had to be away from my kids for a long time. So these aren't hard things to foresee happening. Like, you have to know these things are coming down the pike, that this is going to happen.
And the other thing is, just to bring up real quick, because one of the arguments that Luna is making is that Johnson has proxy voted.
A lot of that was during COVID, by the way. Let's be clear.
That's what I was about to point out. So Democrats allowed proxy voting from May 2020 to January 2023, which is
ridiculous.
Which is ridiculous. That is the entire time they had control of the House. So they first allowed it, as per usual, that you would see that has been happening with the Democrat Party, is that you start one thing and then they can't get rid of it. Okay.
Yeah.
Proxy voting went to the side or whatever when Kevin McCarthy became Speaker of the House and they put an end to proxy voting. So since the Republicans have had control of the House, there has been no proxy voting. And the majority of the proxy voting that Anna Paulina keeps citing is during that was, and not the majority of it, all of it. Like, it was all during the time of COVID when the Democrats were allowing it.
That's insane.
Three years.
And that doesn't do her any favors. Don't cite stuff like that and try and be like sneaky about it. We remember the whole world shut down and we have our thoughts and opinions about that, but it wasn't great. And that is not how our government should operate.
We'll see how it pans out. Clearly, this is a hot topic.
I mean, people are going to be like, oh, wow, we didn't realize how anti-family Miss Sadie and Rachel are. But I am here to tell you, we are very pro-family.
We're
just also pro-Congress doing their jobs. Do the job that it's outlined.
And I am like super, I'm very hyper-conscious because I don't have children. So there are a lot of subjects or like things when it comes to parenting that I don't, like, I stay out of. I'll be with my girlfriends and they'll have the debates about, and I'm just like a fly on the wall because I don't have the experience.
Wine,
yeah. It's like,
chat amongst yourselves.
I'm here for it. I'm going to listen totally, but I don't really give my opinions and I will never tell you what I think you should do because it is not an experience that I have had. Mm-hmm. However, when you are a member of Congress and you're expected to do a job, I got an opinion on it. Okay. And I don't think it's unreasonable. So we'll see what happens with it. We'll see what Johnson ends up doing because he has a few maneuvers here. Is he going to cut a deal with Luna? Is Luna going to let this go if, you know, there's some other benefits and concessions, or is she going to double down?
And let's not forget, Luna is also in charge of the whole everything. So I'm like, girl, if you're like tired and you're not wanting to be away from your baby as much and you want to have these like special accommodations, maybe don't sign up for more of these like assignments.
Dare you tell a woman that she can't do what she wants to do?
I'm not telling her. She can do whatever she wants.
But I get frustrated.
I'm just here asking people to think about consequences for their decisions. That's all.
Sorry. I don't know. I do know that there's also talk, because Johnson really does not want this. So there's talk of him attaching this. Again, it's like when you attach it to a bill that people actually don't want or do want to, like, force to kill one so they can save the other, kind of like a sacrifice. So I don't know. We'll see how that pans out. I would be shocked if he can get the House Freedom Caucus to cooperate.
He can't. I don't think so. And this is not the time. Now I've gotten all that off my chest. I'm going to pivot to your irritation, where I am irritated that you are doing this right now. This, you do not need to do this right now. You do not need to.
I just find it very.
There are so many other things we need to be focused on.
I actually tweeted the other. I posted the other day. I'm like, I'm glad that she is so concerned about herself. Because here's a reminder, okay? This rule that she is pushing right now is for her and the House. It has nothing to do with her constituency.
Don't spend so much time crafting this and going up on all of these. I'm going to partner with the Democrats and we're going to stand there and use our babies as props and we're going to be on television. Do your job. Do the things that the people in your area voted for you to do. I'm sorry.
Your face. They're like,
I'm just do your job. Dang it. It's like Cory Booker standing up there for 25 hours. You got
for nothing.
Oh my gosh. And you know what? I kind of feel bad for the guy. He literally thinks he's like the next John Lewis.
He is one of the most inept politicians. He has not bring a bill like.
But the whole point is, it almost made me feel sad for him. He did all of that. Clearly on some kind of medication. And then all anybody asks him is, how did you not go to the bathroom? No one cares that you did that because it's all performative theater. You know what I mean?
He did break the record, though. Guys, don't know what we're ranting about. Cory Booker.
Go look up Cory Booker. Yeah. Just go do that.
So typically this is done to filibuster some kind of vote or legislation or a nomination or something like that. So a senator will take to the floor and just talk and talk forever. Ted Cruz has done this. A lot of people have done this in the past, okay?
But they usually did it for, like...
or something. Because something was going on. There was a nomination. There was legislation. Something was going on. Cory Booker did it to just rant and be upset and do something. This whole, like,
It was like a protest of Trump. So he's going to talk about how Trump's the worst for 25 hours. And he did. And he beat Strom Thurmond's... famous.
Which was supposed to be symbolic because he was filibustering the Civil Rights Act and he didn't want it to pass and he was a racist.
And now the first person to break it is African-American. Fine. Like, all fine and good. Whatever. If that's what you want to spend your political capital on and you want to do that and this is how you're going to make your mark in history, I mean, good luck, I guess. But the fact remains that he did all of that and he's on every single social media account with an interview and all they're asking him is like, how did you not? Your pants.
Yeah.
I mean, like, okay, that's what you're going to be remembered for.
Your pantalones. Oh my gosh.
Okay. Anyways, all this performative nonsense. Me and Masady are just saying, just do your job. And if you can't do your job, don't become a member of Congress. Could I be one right now? No, I could not. I have accepted reality. And I'm also asking other members of Congress to also enter into reality. Just do what your constituents are asking you to do and why you got voted in. This is it. It's so simple.
All right. So we've ranted.
Yep. We did.
I'm going to go. We're going to start wrapping up, but it is Thursday. So we do have a question.
We have a question and we have to share some fun reviews that we've gotten.
And we have some reviews that we want to share. So we're going a little over today, but whatever. We weren't here on Tuesday, so you get a little bit more. Okay. So
I have a question from one of our paid subscribers. We do this where we ask people who are they're our favorites. They support this work by becoming a paid subscriber. And there's perks, but one of the perks is that they get to drop a question in for Masady and I to answer on Thursday. So Rachel Weissau, I don't know if I'm saying that right.
Sorry, Rachel.
She asked, what is your favorite genre of music?
Oh, that's easy.
Is it easy?
Oh, yeah.
It was not easy for me. Okay, what is your favorite? Hold on. I'm going to guess. I don't know this about you.
Okay.
So I'm going to guess. Your classic rock.
I wouldn't say classic rock, but I'm definitely a rocker for sure.
Okay.
So like when I was in high school, I was alternative rock, hands down. Like
Were you like emo?
No, I was not emo.
Is it emo? Emo? It's emo.
Emo.
Emo is an animal.
A bird.
Okay, sorry, C. I was not so, emo.
First of all,
or emo.
Emo is millennial. Okay.
Oh, see, I don't know.
I was alternative rock.
Or Nirvana. Grunge.
Yeah,
you
I was
grunge.
Very grunge. I was Nirvana, Pearl Jam, Green
I love
Day,
Pearl Jam.
Breeders. Yes. I don't know, like Cake.
Oh, I love Cake. I yeah. do love Cake.
There was all kinds of that was definitely okay. like my genre okay. when I was in high school. Yeah. Now I grew up with my parents were very young. Mm-hmm. I think they had me in their early 20s. So I grew up with I have a very ample knowledge of 80s mm-hmm. music and even 70s, yeah. like 60s, 70s, because of they were. Sorry, my cat just jumped up on my desk and caught me off guard. I was like, what the crap just happened? So, but if you were to, like, what's on my playlist, it's mostly like some form of rock. I love even like AC/DC, that like the hairband kind of metal rock, but I don't like yeah. full like metal rock. I'm not
okay. into
Pantera and Danzing and
I don't even know what any of that is.
And, yeah, those are like, I have a girlfriend who really likes them and I can appreciate a little bit, but I don't ragey stuff that's like yelling at me.
Yeah.
But for me in general, the genre is rock. I cannot stand anything that's like yelling at me, anything that I can't make out. There's a very small selection of like rap or R&B that I really will get into. Classical music is kind of annoying, if I'm going to be honest.
That's sad.
Yeah, I know. It's just, oh my gosh, I feel like I'm in like a perpetual elevator or something.
Oh
like
my
I just,
gosh.
I just can't.
We are not the same.
You know what I mean? Like it's not, if I'm working out, I'm like listening to Metallica or AC/DC or something like that. And okay. then if I'm driving, I'm listening to more alternative stuff that I was listening in high school. So
I got it.
Okay. I think I stopped listening to music like in 2001.
Yeah. I mean, an argument can be made that nothing good has come out since then. Like nothing. Okay. I do like classical music. But I think some of that is because once the kids started getting to an age where music became more accessible, especially with Spotify, we always have music going.
Yeah.
But we couldn't just be listening to anything. And I didn't always want there to be things with lyrics going when the girls were trying to do homeschool and stuff. So we just started listening to a lot of classical music when they were young, and it's just translated. So we do a lot of that, but my kids have their own taste in music. We have introduced them to what we love, and they've loved some of it, and they think some of it's so stupid and weird. But I grew up in a family where oldies were on all the time. And by oldies, I mean the music my parents listened to when they were growing up, like 50s
yeah.
and 60s. So I could basically sing any oldie that comes on the radio and recite all of it. I know who sings it. Like where I was from in California, there was K-Earth 101, which was all oldies all the time. I mean, and I loved it. I grew up listening to the Supremes and the Four Tops and Elvis, and I just love all that still. But if I'm listening to music by myself, I either revert back to like 90s kind of folk music, because that's such a moment in time that I remember all of it. Like I remember every lyric. We're talking like Alanis Morissette and Dave Matthews Band.
You think that's folk music?
No, not folk. I mean, indie.
Oh, you know okay. Saying? I was like,
I'm sorry.
I was like indie. I loved Alanis Morissette and I'm not into
I think that there was a bleed through though. Like they definitely had some. So lots of that 90s music, just because it was such a moment in time. But then also in that moment, I was listening at the same time to that. I was listening to Van Morrison and all of this type of music. So whatever just got thrown in then, you know, I'm going to Jewel concerts and I'm listening to, I know. And so I'm listening to all of that. But then like someone would say, oh, have you ever heard of this band from a long time ago? So it has nothing to do with the actual time range. It just has to do with
like a moment. That
actually moment. Yeah. It's when Sean and I started dating. And so all of it's like mushy, gooey, syrupy, sweet. So
do you know what was, this is going to be really random, one that I used to listen to all the time. I went through a seat and I was actually pretty young for this, was Air Supply.
Yeah. Oh yeah. My husband loves Air Supply.
Like
because my husband in high school and in college, especially in college, was really into electronic music and house music. I mean, we have binders full of CDs from all kinds of European. He would go to the raves, he would go to the actual and see specific DJs spin. He loved it. So, and he loved Air Supply. I remember he had Air Supply's CD. Still does, actually.
So, but yeah, now, because like I will say, when I stopped listening to music basically in 2001 or somewhere in that window. And even now today, like if I am doing stuff, music, I don't like to have music in the background. No, it irritates me.
Yeah, I think
I'll do a podcast or I'll listen to something like that. Yeah. But I just have
More for silence too.
Silence,
or it has to be music with no lyrics. What I was gonna say is, I still love that genre just because that time period in my life was so special. But I also really, really appreciate like 20s, 30s, and 40s, like jazz. And I know you don't like jazz. I love like music, no lyrics, but I don't know. I'm sorry. I love like that time period in history. I very much love, and have always said if I could go back and live, it would be so, at that time period. So it's like
an interesting detail about me is that I don't. So like a lot of people will listen to maybe music or like a sound machine or something like that to fall asleep to.
You need dead silence?
No.
Oh, I need to have noise.
I need to have somebody talking or something talking or like a documentary.
Oh, so you like leave your TV on all night while you sleep?
I'll listen. I have your little ear, like sleeping ear pods, and I'll play like a documentary that I've probably watched like 20 times or
you
whatever.
You have to do that to sleep?
Mm-hmm. To keep the sound out. But
I have to have a fan on.
I can't do a sound machine because I hear, I don't know if I have some kind of condition or something, but I will find a rhythmic pattern in anything.
I do that too. My daughter has a sound machine that's trickling water, and every 4 seconds or so,
like you
it's
can
all
hear,
deet, and then it comes back and it's deet, deet, deet. And then I'll say to Sean, do you hear that?
Yeah. looking for the pattern. And so I can't have anything that has like a rhythmic pattern or something that kind of.
Yeah, I feel you on that.
So that's why
I have to have a fan on my face. At all times, so much so that when we flew to London, I had to buy a fan that I could put onto my face during the flight, where I was like, I need a fan blowing on my face at all times. And if I get to this house in London and there's no fans, I need a fan to put on my face at night. Like, it's just very weird. How do we move from music to our
sleeping
rituals?
I was just trying to talk about sleep, like sound patterns, and you turned into a fan in your face, which I was like,
okay. Rachel got more information than she asked for, but thank you for submitting your question. And so now to our reviews. Please share.
I want to read this one real quick because.
And then I need to go eat breakfast. Have you eaten breakfast?
I have not eaten. I had coffee this morning. So
I need my cheese toast.
Over a little bit. But I want to share two reviews with you. Which one should I do first?
I mean, let's start with the positive one. I mean, let's boost our spirits before someone tries to rip it down.
I know. Okay. So it says, my new besties from Z Twin Mom. And it says, these ladies are having the conversations I wish my real life girlfriends were having with me. They're also so knowledgeable and funny. I love hearing conservative female voices in this space. Thank you. 2 exclamation points.
Oh, I love the exclamation points.
I know. I'm always here for it.
Nice.
However,
thank you.
It was very much appreciated because on the same day, literally the same day, we got a 1-star review.
Yeah,
and it
great.
Just says, my goodness, Billy Bill 1984, you people are morons.
Sorry, Billy Bill.
So they brought our
We disappointed you so much.
We had a rating of 5, which was like excellent. Billy, you brought our rating down to 4.9.
I mean, I feel like we should send Billy some merch. Maybe then. Billy Bill, he or she, not sure.
Well, I'm sure Billy will be glad to know that I stayed up all night fretting over this review.
Oh, me too. That's all I thought about.
I was so upset.
Yeah.
So, all right. So we like to keep it balanced here. We share the negative and the positive with you. Okay.
Sorry, Billy Bill. We will endeavor to do better. We will do the work, as they say.
I mean, we would have liked a little bit more information because just you guys are morons.
Why are we morons, though? Like, I get it. If you don't like, you know, our take on tariffs, that's fine.
But I need to know exactly why I'm a moron so I cannot be so moronic.
Correct. Correct.
All right. So we are done for today's episode of Rivera and Reeves. Thank you guys so much for... Why are you frowning? Are you frowning because we're done?
Oh, no. That's just my face. Oh. Thanks, Miss Sadie.
Okay. All right. Sorry. All right. So we're done for today's episode of Rivera and Reeves. Thanks so much for hanging out with us. If this is your first time here, congratulations. You found your new favorite podcast. Therefore, you're going to give us a 5-star rating because Billy Bill, whatever his face, just tanked our rating. Actually, he did. It doesn't matter. But you're going to give us a 5-star rating. You're going to leave us a lovely review and you're going to share it with a friend because it helps the podcast grow. If you don't want to be listening to ads, if you want bonus content, and if you want to add your own question in the exclusive subscriber chat, consider becoming a paying supporter and help us out. Okay. And that's it for today's episode. We will see you again next week for another episode of Rivera and Reeves. And here's a reminder that the media is trash and we have no tolerance for it. Okay. Bye.
Bye.
Are you ready for more independence as a financial advisor? Consider the RIA model. Schwab Advisor Services has helped thousands of advisors make the move. To find your path, start with Schwab at advisorservices.schwab.com/paths today.